Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the JMO Podcast. I'm your host, Taylor Michaels. Our guest this week, we have Brad Hawthorne back on the show. This is part two. Last week, part one, we got things started just talking about all kinds of different topics. Brad's got a longtime guiding career over on Mille Lacs Lake. He's a year-round guide. You absolutely cannot overstate the amount of days that Brad has on the water, especially on that body of water. He's very nuanced in general, but I feel like, you know, a product of his environment. Mille Lacs is a very nuanced fishery. There's just a lot of great opportunity to catch fish and learn, and it's diverse. It's a big body of water. There's just a lot of great information that can come out of there, and Brad is a great communicator. I've said this before, you know, about Brad's career, and what I appreciate about his opinions and his perspective on fishing is he's a guide that spends every day on the water, and he just knows what it takes to grind and catch fish and put his clients on fish. Also, he balances that being a very nuanced fisherman. He's always on the cutting edge of technology and tactics. He partners with some really great industry companies, working with new baits all the time, new presentations, new technology, sonar, this and that. You know, we're going to talk about those things in this show. We started it last week. We're going to wrap it up this week. And, you know, just going to talk about great technical information of fishing and what it takes to be successful on Mille Lacs. But I feel like this information really transcends Mille Lacs. If you listen to what Brad says, and, if you don't decide to go fish Mille Lacs this year, or if Mille Lacs is far away from you and you just don't have, if you listen to this stuff, this is some high-level fishing perspective here from a guy like Brad that has earned it. He's paid his dues. He put his time on the water, and just very, very fun for me to talk to somebody like Brad Hawthorne. So, you know, I guess I'm rambling on here, but I just want to make sure that I'm introducing this properly. Brad is just a great fisherman. We're excited to have him on the show this week. Let's get into this interview. We're talking Mille Lacs walleyes with Brad Hawthorne. When would you say is running and gunning kind of the have to do type of thing? And when do you think there's some decent opportunity for, you know, those hard sided shacks? If we're just talking like kind of the fishing, the fish patterns, the walleye patterns, like early time of year.
So kind of how it plays out, like if you write the playbook for Mille Lacs, the run and gun and really capitalizing on those numbers of fish is definitely December and January. And once you start getting towards January, things kind of go a little bit nocturnal, which really plays into the hard-sided. It definitely, if you have a skid house, I'd be like, yeah, put that thing on a rock pile, put it on the top, fish there before sunup and at sundown for an hour and a half each day and call it good, go home and spend time with the family. But, you know, when we get into later season, a lot of times what I do with my Yeti is I just keep it hooked up to the truck and it's hydraulic. So literally, I got the plow on it. I plow to the next spot, drop it down, drill it. Customers ride in there. They're fishing. They're like, they can't even believe it. They're cooking a pizza and I'm moving them to the next spot. Like it's so crazy. Right. So, but during that late season, that's why you see Mille Lacs just get infused with all these wheelhouses. Cause they've already been to Red. They've been to Lake of the Woods. Now they're like, man, I don't want to drive, 5 hours to catch, four fish and turn around or bring home four fish. And they're like, well, let's go to Mille Lacs this weekend because we can keep one fish between 21 and 23, which is literally like 2 pounds of meat once you fillet that fish. It's just it's a magnum, right? So, and the guys come out and you get them on a spot and they'll move around. That's the thing. I don't care how, if you have a 16-foot house or a 26-foot house, you hit the hydraulic button or crank your jacks and you can literally be to another spot, holes drilled in 15 to 20 minutes. So I would say that's why I like Mille Lacs is popular, is you have your early run and gun, it gets a lot of pub, and then you start with your single axles and half tons and guys are getting out there and they're having fun and doing, and then all of a sudden it's one tons and tandem and houses and the roads are out to the mud flats and people are bombing everywhere and catching fish. It's really kind of like if you could really slow down Upper Red Lake, because Upper Red Lake, like they just started walking out there a few days ago. And all of a sudden, like a week later, it's like, hey, we're allowing half tons and single axles out. It just gets fried so quick, you know?
Oh, man. And it happens fast, too. Like when the ice gets going, this time of year, like this is the anticipation we all have, because I still feel like, you know, the average guy is still probably hanging out. You know, I've been saying this for a couple of weeks now because there has been, like, on Upper Red, I mean, there's been some walk access in plenty of spots here in the Midwest. Obviously, Canada's had some ice for a little while, but ultimately, I think as far as like safe ice, and you know, most people aren't going to go until they can drive a half ton out or whatever. And so, you know, we're still talking to a lot of people that are waiting for their first timeout, you know, or whatever. But you know, talking about that, if you can take advantage of you know, the run and gun stuff, early ice, so what would you say are kind of the, on Mille Lacs there, like what is kind of the, like you said, the playbook, if we can narrow that playbook down to, you know, some of this early ice stuff, I mean, what does an average day look like for you each year, early ice, the first couple weeks that you're out there? I mean, what are the main things that are on your mind as far as where you're going to start looking, how you're going to start looking, what kind of baits are you going to have tied on? Like, what is your expectation going to be?
Well, first, it's, you know, you have to establish your safe areas to get customers out. And you really have to watch the ice pack for movement, what's it's doing. You have to be familiar with if there's an open spot, if it's going to shift. You got to be the referee and going, hey, we're going to open up. No, we're going to stay closed down. And I've been out, you know, and you go, okay, I kind of judge it by there's very little chance, no chance that the whole ice pack is going to shift and we're going to get stranded. That's when I kind of start ice guiding and know that, you know, if there is a small chance of that, that 2 or 3 o'clock, I'm not staying out deep. I'm not staying way out under the mud until that sun goes down and the ice contracts and you can get into trouble. I'm pulling the groups back and doing that. So safety is number one early season. Number two is after you establish your safe places to go and fish, then it's figuring out if everything you learned in the fall is still the same. And that's usually the fish stay put or stay within reason of where they were. And just kind of picking up where you left off, because you had a month and a half, 2 months off, you know. So establish those areas, get out there, find where they moved to, which they shouldn't have moved far, and then start capitalizing on it and figure out what color they want, you know, what flats produce when, you know, what's a good daytime bite. You know, every year it changes to where, like, 4 years ago, Schultz's flat. You can go up to Schultz flat in the afternoon on top and you got bit pretty much throughout the early part of the season, you know, and that kind of changes. So part of it is just learning, you know, learning through the early season. But for the guy that's going to go out and do it himself, I would say be very, very cautious. Chisel your way out, you know, don't take anything for granted. Travel with a buddy, you know, all the safety stuff. Mille Lacs is a big lake that does move around, and don't ever take it for granted, because if you do, you're going to be getting a helicopter ride.
Oh yeah. And yeah, that, like you say, like everybody, you can, even if you haven't been preached all the safety features that the industry has as far as, like, you know, things to have, gear to have, or this and that, like, common sense is going to get you a long ways. Just don't cut any corners. Ultimately, don't be thinking you're going to get away with something, you know, because that whole bit, just, there's just no excuse for it, and it just ain't worth it. But you know, to track on something that you're talking about there, early ice and like kind of where you're going to be fishing. Now, Mille Lacs is a big body of water. Not every single school of walleyes is doing the exact same thing. For you, when you're getting out there in the early part of the season, I mean, you know, I mean, getting right down to it. I mean, are you spending much time shallow, maybe on shoreline structure? How much offshore structure are you working with? Talk a little bit about kind of how you break down some of the walleye patterns on Mille Lacs early ice.
We're honestly burning out those first breaks is what we're doing. Looking for little indifferences that we already have mapped. You know, the one cool thing we've had for years now is hummingbird, you know, being able to map, you know, and going there and finding these things that they've missed on Lake Master, and these little indifferences in the first break hold fish. And whether that's on the bottom edge or the top edge, and being able to auto chart live those and make your own map has been huge for me. Absolutely huge. And you can make those maps in winter and in summer, by the way. So like, if don't get down, you don't have, doesn't have to be summertime to do it. If you find a little area that's got something a little different, drill it out, drop your deucer, hit a couple buttons, you're making your own map. And that's basically what we're doing, is looking for those high percentage areas, even on a sand indifference on the first break. And that's pretty much first ice in a nutshell, is finding those areas when the sun is high, get out as deep as you can safely. And then when the lake lets you, like, start running all over it, then you do it. But early season is, if we have no snow, I leave the rattles out of it. I'm using my forage minnow with minnow head, natural colors. If we have snow cover, and then you can fish a little bit shallower, use a little bit rattlers, those UV colors come into play. And the main thing about early ice is staying mobile. Like, don't ever set up camp just because things are mediocre. Don't ever settle for mediocre on early ice. Early ice is literally blazing. You just have to find out where they're on fire. That's the truth of it. Even on slow days on Mille Lacs, you should be able to grind out 30, 40 fish.
And, you know, that's what I like to hear, is like, just, you know, kind of like a, where you would set your expectations for yourself. Like even if you weren't guiding, like, you know what I mean? Like just kind of knowing what you're up against and never settling for that, because I think, you know, obviously that's the passion, man. That's the deal. And on Mille Lacs, like, would you say, looking back over the years, is the bite windows thing a big deal? I mean, how, you know, you get pretty detail oriented on your spots when you're on a good spot. If, you know, worst come to worst, could you run traffic and have a decent day? You know, versus, like you said, I mean, you got to stay mobile. Are you talking about big moves where, you know, it just ain't happening right here, so I got to go 3 miles, or it sometimes, you know, you just got to move a little down the break?
Just a little bit. Yeah, early season is kind of like, I would call it, like, micro move for me would be like 100 yards. Or let's say you found a lot of fish. Say you caught 15, 20 fish with your group, whether that's a bunch of buddies or on a guide trip. And then fish, they disappeared. Well, then it's like, okay, where'd they go? That was obviously a big school, and we put most of them back, so where the hell did they go? And it's like, if they're not deep, they're shallow. So click on live and, like, look for them, and then get back on them. And you'll see, like, with live, what happens is you'll burn fish out. Like, say there's 30 fish in a school, and you sore lip, like, 20 of them, it's time to move on, dude. Like, they're like, hey, we've had enough. Go find another pack of fish, you know? And on Mille Lacs, you can keep one fish, you know what I mean? So you're not really fishing out the schools anymore. You're just really educating them. And they're like, hey, man, I'm not biting that coffin middle spoon anymore, dude. Get out of here. That's all they're saying. You know, move on down to the next one. But that's the thing with fish is people, you know, they don't get, like, some, if you find a school of 15 fish and you catch 10, it might be time to move.
I mean, like, would you say, like, what would your expectation be like that if it was, say, an average to an above average bite? And then on the versus, we'll contrast it with, say, like, average or below average. Like, when you're kind of figuring out the mood of fish and you feel like it's average to maybe above average on the bite or just the activity level of the fish, and you're looking at it at live, so you got a decent idea. You know how big this spot is. You got a decent idea that there's an X amount of fish there. How many do you expect to get bit? And is there anything about how you fish that maybe gets you bit a little bit more in that scenario? Like, talk about that. Like, how many does it take to really wear out your welcome, and what can you do to make it, to maximize it?
It depends on how many fish you see on your 360. Like, if I go, okay, there's 20 fish on 360 or live, and you go, okay, usually about half to three quarters of the school, if your catch rate gets up to there, you're kind of getting towards the end of, like, your chances of re-catching fish are a lot less than catching new fish. And obviously there's less new fish to catch now because you caught them all. And they went back to the school, and they're like, hey, man, fool me once, shame, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. But that seems like a lot. Like, that seems like a really good batting average. Like, even if I didn't have that technology, if I caught If I had a heck of a run during like, you know, like a like just like a golden hour, you know, coming into primetime evening walleye bite, and I caught 10 walleyes, if somebody came in there with a crystal ball and told me that, well, there was 15 of them down there and you caught 10 of them, I would hardly believe that. Like, I would think that was incredible.
Gold star. No, that's gold star stuff. If you catch 3/4 of the school, you're getting a gold star. And like, to kind of somewhat answer your question on that, I shoot for 50 fish a day per person. Do we hit that all the time? No. When we do, yeah, absolutely. It's awesome. Does that happen all the time? No. I find that with customers, if I'm shooting that, you know, 15 to 35 fish a day, if I can achieve that, I'm rocking it. You know, that's a lot of fish if you add up 6-8 guys for the day. And that's where, you know, it kind of lays on the expectation of, you know, guys are like, oh, I caught 200 fish on Lake of the Woods. Oh, sure you did in 6 hours. It's like physically impossible with rebaiting, taking your deucer out of the hole. Like it would literally have to be, you know, 3 feet deep to get that done, especially with, you know, walleyes because they fight, you know, like.
Yeah. You'd have to be like trying to break a world record, like, from the get-go of, like, you'd have to just be, like, in a panic rebaiting, like you said, because most people, after you've caught 20 walleyes and you feel like you're having a good day, everybody's mood changes. You're kind of all, like, you've already had such a good day that, like, you know, a lot of people start hitting the cooler and getting into the refreshments. I mean, you know, like, that's a pretty hard thing to achieve, you know. I don't know. A little bit of stories there. But, you know, like, getting on track there, though, like, you know, you're using this live technology and it's probably teaching you a lot of things about, like, what we're talking about, like creating an expectation on, like, a really good, when there's a really good bite. So, like, on Mille Lacs, you know, like, when you feel like, what are some of those, the signs, or how many fish got to come in and look and not bite for you to feel like maybe the mood of the fish is getting a little more negative or it's time to move? Like, what are some of those decisions, that, you know, your decision making process in those scenarios of, like, you guys are still here?
You gotta fish them through. Like, let's say I come to an area and fishing's mediocre, right? Mediocre at best. Let's just say it's 9 o'clock and everyone's caught 5 fish. And I'm like, oh, this sucks. We get to an area. Everyone's super fishy on their graphs. Like, they got fish yo-yoing, coming up, coming down. First thing I'll do is drop camera, make sure they're not small perch or tulibees. Usually you can tell a tulibee because they're really fast on the screen. You know, they move super quick, twice as fast as a walleye. You know, make sure that's the target species. If they are, that's where I'll bust out the tip downs. And dude, I've got a super awesome system of tip downs. I keep them in 6-gallon buckets. I can literally have 12 set lines out on tip lines or on tip downs in like 15 minutes. And if those fish are going to start popping set lines and jigging spoons or bringing them in, like that's the decisions you make. I mean, if you're marking a ton of fish, you don't just, why would you leave fish to go find fish? That doesn't make any sense. Like, if there's fish here, they're verified walleyes. Yeah, they're not. You can't spoon feed them. All right, let's drop the set lines down. And you should see my customers like, holy cow, did you just pivot? And it's like, yeah, pivot because there's a ton of fish here. And next thing you know, the fish start popping on set lines. And then all of a sudden, slowly but surely, they start popping on spoons as you're starting that feeding frenzy. You're starting that bite window. You created that bite window by putting down the dinner plate. And that's like the difference between a good ice angler and like a great ice angler is being able to go, okay, leaving fish in the winter is probably not the smartest thing you can do, especially after you put that work into drilling them, finding them. It's, they'll go eventually, and 9 times out of 10 you just got to figure out how, if you're using, you know, heavy duty equipment, you know, heavy spoons, loud rattles, things like that. A lot, you just got to de-escalate the situation down to a plain hook and figure out, you know, and start catching fish. Now, if you get to a plain hook, if you set out set lines and you get 15 minutes and you don't have a bite, time to move, man. Now it's time to move and move quick.
Do you I like hearing that version of the story. I want to unpack that as much as I possibly can. Any opinions you have on that? Because like your progression of, like, you know, entering an area, you know, you're going to use your technology to try to locate. And you know, and to be fair, we could probably speak to, you know, drilling out these spots, you know, even without the live technology, because not everybody's going to have that either. I mean, you're going to have to drill out some of these spots to figure out the extent of it and to figure out what's there. But I have such a strong opinion in the same way of like, if I'm seeing marks and I'm confident in any way, shape, or form that it's the target species, and not just the target species, but it's the quality of fish that I'm looking for, like having that progression and just kind of having a plan that you can execute to go through, get down to as finessey as you possibly can to try to get that bite. Versus all, you know, otherwise you got to uproot everything. And as a fishing guide, you know, when you got to do everything for your customers, like there's a huge investment. Yeah.
It's about making smart decisions. That's what it's all about. Like you have to be able to make smart decisions, trust them, because you're the one making the decisions for 4 to 6 people a day. And trust me, if you don't make the right ones, you are going to, maybe you may not hear about it that day, but you may see a review online.
Oh yeah, totally. Would you say, like, you know, the decision-making process, but even before you get out there, like with gear and stuff, your gear selections and just like some of your, you know, maybe your line selection, you know, your hook sizes, like, do you kind of, are you the kind of guy that, you know, maybe errs a little bit on the finesse side early, or are you, do you try to get away with, you know, like guys like Jason's the kind of guy that he'll purposely try to get away with the biggest line, the biggest hook, you know, the biggest everything he can. And then he works his way backwards from there. But there's just something up in his mind that if he can catch a big fish using big gear, like it just kind of, I don't know, whatever. It's like the thing that rings his bell, right? But he definitely sacrifices bites. He's just that type of guy. He'll personally, when he's fishing by himself, now in a guide scenario, you got to make decisions on how successful people, you know, their day of fishing. I mean, they're paying, you know, good hard cash to be fishing with you. And so you got to make strong considerations on getting bites. So for you, you know, working from the other way, trying to, you know, and you know, not everybody's going to be experienced at reeling fish in. So you kind of got to, you know, have gear that isn't going to break off if they're horsing them in, that kind of thing. Talk a little bit about that and kind of, you know, gear selection in your situation that helps you get bites, but also brings fish topside.
Well, one is line. Like, so not everyone has what we have here. Mille Lacs is super clear. Like even on our set lines, we're using, you know, 15 feet of tip line. So Jason always starts really heavy, really buku. I mean, I start in the middle. I'm using 6 pound test line, swivel 18 to 20 inches above my spoon. And I just really start that natural approach just because we're dealing with a gin clear lake. So, you know, Devils is a little stained, so you can get away with, throwing a little bit heavier, you can get away with throwing heavy artillery out there to some extent. So that's where his mindset comes from. It's just the body of water he grew up guiding on. You know, here's a little bit different. I would love to fish like that. Trust me, I would. Everyone would. Like throwing big grenades, catching big fish. Like that's everyone's dream. The reality out here is, it's more technical. You have to, you know, use the things you've learned over the years and pass those on to your customers and use smaller spoons, use smaller diameter line, fish deeper, know when cloud cover's a thing, know that when you have snow cover on an overcast day, know what colors work. You know, that's the difference. So to start out, like to round it out on Mille Lacs, 5 to 6 pound fluorocarbon. Fluorocarbon's key. I use fluorocarbon as tip line and main line. No braid ever, period. Use a swivel 18 to 20 inches above the lure. I am on overcast days with a lot of snow. UV is king. Without snow or little snow on bright sunny days, you're using those natural colors, and that always, it just pulls through. It always pulls through. And then the other dirty little secret is everyone thinks minnow heads and red larva or just natural covered larva on spoons sometimes outproduces minnow heads on Mille Lacs. For whatever reason, I don't know, maybe it's scent, texture, I don't know what it is, but those days, you'll go through two tubs of spikes just on spoons, just chandeliering them.
The JMO podcast is sponsored by Long Haul Trucking. Long Haul's always looking for more skilled professional CDL drivers to join their team. They're a people-first company, and it shows. Their employee-owned, asset-based fleet of over 350 Conestogas is among industry leaders in pay and benefits geared towards long-term success and growth for company drivers and owner-operators. If you're a professional driver or a company that wants to ship product with the best in the business, get a hold of Long Haul at 1-800-255-5153 or find them online at longhaultrucking.com. Long Haul, running on the power of promises kept. If you have those little tricks, or if you kind of have a progression that has a few more, you got a few more tools in the toolbox, you know, you don't always have to take a no for an answer, and you can get after it, you know, that little bit. So that I think that's awesome information, man. I mean, what would be some other good, you know, just some other good tidbits talking about Mille Lacs? Is that, you know, you're spot on, you know, that perspective. Cause like I fish with Jason all the time, right? And when people come and fish with us for the first time, or it's been a while since they fished with Jason, and then, you know, he does, man. He just fishes with a bazooka. Like he,
I love it, dude. I love the way Jason fishes. Oh, like
he's so rough. And I've adopted it completely. I love it. I mean, but we, you're right. We fish these sloughs, and, you know, we experience some clear water. There's no doubt about it. You know, we have a spectrum of water, but you know, one of Jason's and Jason is kind of my personal barometer, you know, in the industry of, like, you know, just like a good astute angler. He loves fishing Mille Lacs, and he loves the content that comes out of Mille Lacs. Mille Lacs is one of those places that you can always go to that's different. There's aspects of it that are really great and fun and make it like a fun, kind of like an easy place to catch nice fish. But at the same time, Mille Lacs always has, it has its flavor. It has its curveballs that if you're from somewhere else, you can take things away from Mille Lacs that you can bring back to your home water that will make you better. Mille Lacs is the type of place that will make you better if it's a destination for you, you know, in that sense. And Jason and has helped me appreciate these, you know, destination, going somewhere that's different. You know, it's like, why drive past fish to go to Mille Lacs to catch fish? You know, Mille Lacs is a type of place that will teach you something. It will teach you about your gear, and that, you know,
it'll make you a better angler.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, totally. And Jason loves that, and he, you know, makes me appreciate that a ton. This kind of a little sidebar though, because I'm so glad you brought that up, that, you know, we're all just sort of like a product of where we fish, and like our home body of water really influences us the most, you know, in our decision making and in our process and things like that. And Mille Lacs is one of those places. Everything that you've talked about here, I just love it. I think this is such a great, it's just such a great conversation to have, because when people listen to it, if they don't fish Mille Lacs a lot or ever, just hearing this, and you're using 15 feet of a leader, you know, on your set lines, like, it's gin clear water, and that produces bites over you know, most people, you know,
like, dude, it's such a huge thing. That one of the main things I told the guys at ice camp, I'm like, you guys got to lengthen your tip line on these. And the thing is, these, you know, old crows of Mille Lacs that come rent to fish house, first thing they're like, why the hell does he have 15? That's a waste of line. And he cuts it down to 2 feet, and the main line's fluorescent yellow.
Yeah.
And he throws a quarter ounce sinker on there, and Northland RZ jig and skull hooks a shiner, and then complains.
Yeah, it doesn't do as well, man. And dude, that is so true. And you know what? It's like, yeah, it just kind of makes you value, like this is probably just a perspective thing in general, where it doesn't have to be Mille Lacs. You can go somewhere else and learn something. But Mille Lacs, the things that you learn on Mille Lacs, just like something that you would learn if you went somewhere else that has a, like, sort of a specific flavor to it. And Mille Lacs with that gin clear water, you know, there's just so much to that that kind of helps you appreciate, you know, paying attention to some details that you didn't otherwise, pay attention to it before, and now you do. It just kind of levels you up a little bit. Like, it just makes you better, because you just, now you know that there's a value there. Now you know that knowing what line and I'm going to use and why and how I'm going to select that, and knowing that, you know, something can be tweaked. Like, there's always, you can, if you catch 10 out of 15 walleyes that come through on a bite window,
rockstar.
You know, you're a rockstar, but you know what? There's still five fish that didn't bite, right? Like, if you just always know that you're never so good that you caught them all, and just knowing that you can be a student of the game. You know, that's what places like Mille Lacs can just go there and they can humble you, and you can learn these types of things that, you know, you've just done for years. And that's why I just love having you on here. But yeah, man,
dude, I gotta say, like, I can't believe me and you need to talk more, because honestly, like, this is like me and you just chat like long lost buddies about fishing. And like, honestly, the worst thing you can do on Mille Lacs, like, to round out the Mille Lacs talk on where to find fish, the worst thing you can do is fish a memory. You can start on a memory, but don't stay there if there's no fish.
I literally had that written down, dude. This is like, we probably only have time for this to end this conversation. I was going to write down, getting back to like the fishing and setting your expectations on your spots. How often, if you look back on a season, what advice could you give to people if they're going to fish a 3 or a 4 day fishing trip on Mille Lacs? How many days in a row, how many hours should they put or expect to put on a particularly good spot? Like, when you're fishing a memory, can you start tomorrow where you left off, but are you going to fish one spot for 4 days? I mean, how much do these fish move, and how can you kind of help somebody build an expectation that has never ice fished Mille Lacs before in that regard?
It's simple. You start counting. So you get there and you start counting the fish you mark and the fish you catch, right? So I usually give it 2 days on a morning evening spot. I'm not going to sit, you know, I'm not sitting there for 48 hours straight. I'll come back to those spots. But if I mark 20 fish in an evening and only get bit 5 times, I'm coming back to that the next evening. Like, that, there's no doubt in my, I'm coming back there, because those are the fish you marked. What about the other fish that were, it kind of, if you mark 20 fish in an hour and a half period, like, you know that there's probably double to triple that there. And if that school decides to light on fire, you're going to be in heaven. Now, if you only mark 2 fish or 4 fish or 8 fish, man, now you're like, oof, should probably move. Especially if you get up in the morning and you duplicate those same results morning, evening, now it's time to start looking for a new spot, especially if you're talking a peak period spot.
And if, like, when you're marking fish, like, if you're seeing fish, you're not catching them, you know, you're thinking that it's maybe a time of day deal, but you still got to kind of go look for new spots. How much of a pattern can you put together on, you know, getting back to, say, here, you know, we're a few weeks away, but Mille Lacs, when Mille Lacs get going and guys are taking wheelers side by sides, when the majority, if not the whole lake, is starting to be used, so you kind of have, you know, you can look for any pattern that you're looking for. How much of that ties into your decision-making throughout the day? If you're seeing fish, you know, or maybe you do, maybe you whack them out on a spot. Are you going to go look for fish, you know, a half a mile down on the same pattern, you know, or how often do you got to change throughout the day the pattern, you know, the depth that you're looking for, you know, the structure that you're fishing? I mean, you know, how often are you incorporating that into your decision-making process?
I let the day tell me, honestly. Like, I was talking a lot about sun penetration. Light penetration is a really big deal. You know, sometimes we find those fish because the lake is so clear. Sometimes, in this, maybe a term you have heard or haven't heard, on the darker light side of the flats, a lot of times these mud flats out here go up 6-8 feet and they cast a shadow, and a lot of times those fish are laying in the shadows, and that's where you find them. They're not sitting out in the light. It's too bright for them, and that's kind of an odd thing, but you think of fishing the dark side of cover, you fish in the shadow side of a cover. I know Jason knows this from fishing, you know, the dark sides of the rocks for smallmouth. Well, walleyes do the same thing on structure. And a lot of times, you know, that's where you find them. So I guess after spewing that out in a podcast. I kind of really don't have, I have a few tricks left, but that's one, one big one.
I was just going to say, I was like, man, that is such a sneaky thing to think about, man. And, but you know what, to an extent, you know, you probably got to drill some holes to figure that out too. You know, I mean, you know,
yeah,
you
think about how many holes that one took me, because I figured that out without live technology.
Yeah.
A lot of trial and error right there.
Yeah. And, to, you know, as far as like, I mean, the fish definitely move. Do you think the fish congregate in those types of spots? Or do you think that, you know, throughout the day when you've got some high sun and you finding some, you know, the shady side of some structure, you know, maybe those are just the only fish that are kind of willing to bite because they're in that environment, you know, versus...
Yeah, you're fishing the bedroom. You know, you're fishing the least productive time of day. And these fish are like, hey, man, you know, they want a little darkness. They want some shade. And you're interrupting them in their bedroom with a juicy presentation. You're going to catch a few. Well, I mean, it's interesting. The other thing is, walleyes generally in the winter, they're looking for dark water. That's how they get big. That's how they eat, man. Walleyes don't get big swimming 2 feet under the surface in bright sun. You know, they get big because they're a one hell of a predator.
Yeah, they know what they're looking for, and you got to give respect where it's due when how these fish can move and the miles that they can put on in a season, you know, much less a weekend, is pretty impressive when it all boils down to food and eating. You know, that being said, I might be able to have enough time to fit this in. I mean, for you, bait selection, like, are you matching the hatch all the time, you know, in the winter as far as, you know, figuring out the forage base, you know, matching the hatch, or, talk about that.
If you listen to this whole podcast, you'd be like, Hawthorne's using natural silver, gold, you know, he's using all natural shades. Could be furthest from the truth. Mille Lacs is an anomaly when you talk about color. I don't know why. I don't care why. The fish out here really like UV. And it doesn't matter if it's bright sun. You'll know after the third fish either bites or leaves you. I've caught walleyes more times than not on, you know, pink UV, orange UV, green UV is a great color out here. Bright sun, high noon, on top of a mud flat, 24 feet of water, 24 inch walleye, you're reeling up, need an assist to get it up. Like, it makes no sense. But for some reason, they like it here. And I don't know why. That's where Mille Lacs is like, you would really think silver, gold, natural colors would be the staple out here, and it's not. It's your glows, it's your UVs, it's your, you know, your Wonder Bread colors out here. I mean, it's almost like a Lake Erie, for crying out loud. I mean, I got a bunch of buddies that are out in Lake Erie, and they're like, you're using what? That's a Cedar Point color. I'm like, no, that's called Sneeze out here. They're like, no, that's called Cedar Point. I'm like, well, no, it's not. And it's one of our best colors out here. It's simply chartreuse, orange, and green is what it is.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think that every astute angler, you know, is going to have some level of like a, you know, sort of an opinion on what gives them confidence on that. Would you say, like, is there just something to, if you try to match the hatch, you're going to blend in too much with all the competition and you got to set yourself apart? I mean, or do you think it's more scientific than that?
No, I think you're just trying to grab attention, right? Like, I know when I got two kids, when my 3.5-year-old's screaming, I'm like, what's going on, bud? You know, when my 1-year-old's like content in his high chair, like, I know who, you know, it's just like that. And if you're hunting for food, if you're looking to eat and you see something wiggling 50 feet away and it's making noise and whatever, you're going to go over to it. Especially, like, we give walleyes way too much credit. They don't think like me and you. They're a cold-blooded creature. You know, turtles are cold-blooded. They don't get scared. they don't They don't like go, hey, I'm going to go hide. They don't do that. They literally, they eat, they reproduce, and they live their life cycle. And there's really not much thought that goes through their brain other than that, you know, and that's where, but they don't always eat, you know, they're more susceptible to pressure, barometric pressure, than they are to the color that you're using that day.
Yeah. And I, you know, like you say, like Mille Lacs, that just makes Mille Lacs kind of special too, where, you know, people that fish, you know, dirty water their whole life, you know, just aren't, you know, the tactics of calling fish in aren't the same, you know, and then you go to Mille Lacs and it's like, you can maybe, you can fish too slow, you know, or even too fast to an extent. I mean, you just, you know, these kind of conversations and giving people a little direction on where to set their expectations, I think is super valuable. But man, we've done it, man. We covered so much ground and this was fun, dude. I literally feel like we could talk for two more hours. Anything else you want to promote? You know, just, you know, throw your name out there where people can find you or anything cool that you want to throw out. We'll just end it like that.
I don't know. I want to thank you and Jason for doing this, man. And I appreciate you guys and I love being on your show. And, you know, if guys want to, if they feel like they connect and want to hire me out, my name is Brad Hawthorne. You call me at 651-271-8600 or go to MilleLacsLakeGuide.com and contact me through my website.
There it is, man. Awesome. Appreciate your time, Brad. I'll let you back to it, dude, and we'll be in touch.
Sounds good, man. Talk to you soon.
All right, we'll talk to you.